Welcome to Dead Souls Social Club.
If you enjoy our show and you find our research interesting, please leave us a 5-star review on your chosen podcast platform. Something that small really does go a long way in helping us out. You can find more about us and the research that we do by heading over to Instagram and searching our name. As always, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Some horror stories scare people to their very souls due to the grotesque, or due to the sheer shock of what the listener or viewer is experiencing. Things that make you jump or cause your heart to race. But for me, sheer terror, the kind that petrifies you to your very core, is more subtle, more lingering. Jump scares may be fleeting, momentary episodes and quick bursts of adrenaline. But fear that stays with you, that festers in your mind, refusing to leave, well, that's what I consider truly disturbing. Things you cannot forget, unsee, unexperience, or take away that are left hanging in the dark cellar of your mind, drip-feeding dread into your subconscious at every moment you allow your mind to not be busied or full. Tonight on Dead Souls, we don't have jump scares for you. We have lingering fear and dread, something that will be more than content to lurk in your mind for quite some time to come. In fact, we were going to save this series of investigations until Halloween, but we put a vote out this week on our Instagram and asked all of you guys what you wanted to hear next. You voted absolutely for a ghost story. And my friends, by Christ, have you got one tonight. This is New Church, Part 1. For purposes of clarity and setting the scene, New Church is a very small rural village in Mid Wales, my home country. The land of dragons, mysticism and breathtaking beauty. New Church is located in Radnorshire and close to the border with England, and close to the neighbouring community of Gladestry. Both places together have a combined population of just 400 people. So as I said, it's very, very small, with the town originally being founded back in the 15th century, with the village essentially establishing itself around the central St. Mary's Church, which still stands today. Up until around a year ago, I had never heard of New Church, even though it's only around a 90-minute drive from my home and a mere 70 miles, give or take. The town very much lives in obscurity. A quiet, extremely sleepy and quaint chocolate box town that lives at its own pace, far from busy cities or large populations. I first heard about New Church on Thursday the 17th of August 2023, which sounds very specific. And well, because it is. I remember where I was. In fact, my partner and I had driven down to Bristol that day to see some friends. It was a clear, sunny and very warm summer's day, the type of day that summer should be in August. Though because I'm British, we have to endure the odd grey and rainy day too. But this certainly wasn't one of those. The sun brings everyone out in the UK and puts folks in a good mood. We make the most of days like these and appreciate them when they happen. I was sat in a coffee shop in St. Nicholas Market in the heart of Bristol city centre. There was lots going on around me. It's a busy place, but St. Nicholas Market gives a sense of calm amongst the hustle and bustle of the city around. I was joined by 5 friends, and we chatted, caught up, laughed, and drank coffee in the midday sun. Then my phone beeped with a notification. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I'm pretty strict with myself on social media. Bottom line is, I hardly ever use it, other than for the research and podcast account, which I share with 3 others who work alongside me. I have long deleted personal accounts on things like Facebook, and I think I'm a generation too late for that TikTok thing. We have an Instagram account for the podcast, though, as I said, and I limit myself to no more than 30 minutes use in a 24-hour period, on average. I find social media incredibly damaging for a variety of reasons, but that's a separate subject altogether, and I don't want to digress. Anyway, I don't normally have notifications activated on my phone either. The only time my phone makes a noise is when someone calls me or texts me, essentially. All apps are muted. But on that day, I had allowed notifications from Instagram specifically, because I had messaged someone overseas about an interview for the show, and I wanted to be able to know when he replied so that I could communicate with him at his convenience and in his time zone. So my phone beeped. It was the gentleman replying about the interview request, I thought. Even though I was with friends, I took a look at the message. But the message wasn't from who I was expecting. It was from a gentleman named Jonathan, a listener of the show, who was looking for some answers. He was reaching out to Dead Souls for some advice. So my first question really is, why did you want to share your story with us and our listeners?
Well, we have never wanted publicity, or to be the kind of family who wants any attention for this. That's not the reason I sent the message. I think I just realised that I'm the only one in my family still around that experienced this, and we have never really told anyone about it. So I'm hoping that I can finally get some answers, even if it is just information.
Ever since that August day when I first read Jonathan's email, I found this story hard to forget. He just wanted to share his experience and hopefully get some insight from our team. I really don't think he counted on meeting us all and being part of an investigation. What you experienced, even though it was quite some time ago, how did it affect you, and does it still affect you?
It affected me in more ways than you could possibly imagine. Honestly, I wouldn't wish those experiences on my worst enemy. Jamie, I have issues with anxiety and nervousness that I can only attribute to what happened back then. I want to be very clear. I absolutely do not believe in ghosts, the devil, demons, or any of that stuff. But I swear to God that what happened to me and my family in that house was real, and I have no idea what the hell it was.
We have all heard the story of the Enfield poltergeist, the Amityville horror, the haunting of the Smurl family, and dozens of other paranormal experiences that made the families at the centre of those stories almost famous for a period of time when they shared their experiences. You can argue that some of it were in it for the money and publicity, sure. Well, what happens when a family goes through a similar experience, but they are too embarrassed and scared to tell anyone? When they refuse to seek help or advice for fear of ridicule? Let's get straight into it. Jonathan, our listener who contacted us, is 34. He's the father of a little girl and looks almost bookish with his greying hair, thick black framed glasses and dark stubble. He lives with his wife and daughter in a Welsh town by the name of Crick Howell now, but he was originally from Southwater in West Sussex. He works as an English teacher, essentially setting in stone that bookish look.
Yeah, I guess I'm a stereotypical English teacher. I even have the jackets with leather elbow patches. My little girl makes fun of me and calls me Professor, actually.
So Jonathan's story starts around 2004. I'm actually surprised as I write this to say that was 20 years ago now. I feel old. But back then, Jonathan was just a teenager. His parents, and he won't mind me saying this, had made quite a bit of money through the family construction business, and they wanted to leave their hometown for something more rural and rustic.
They decided they wanted a place in the Welsh countryside. They wanted a little bit of land. My older sister was in her final year at the University of Portsmouth, but she already had a post-uni job offer lined up. She also had a fairly serious and long-term boyfriend, so there was no doubt that she intended to stay down there after uni.
Jonathan's parents had been looking for the perfect house for almost a year, and he didn't think they were ever going to move. But out of the blue, one day, his mother told him that they had finally found somewhere, and asked him to go with them to see it for himself.
So as soon as we got there, I hated the place. I knew they were looking for a rural farmhouse, but this house was in the back end of nowhere. The house itself was fine and looked nice, but there was no one my age around. There was no shops, no cinema, not much of anything for a teenage boy to do. I just hated it.
Jonathan's parents' minds were made up, however, and and Jonathan didn't see the point in resisting too much.
I said, "Don't moan at me when I have no friends and nothing to do, and I'm stuck in the house all of the time." My mum already had her heart set on the place, though, and my dad, rightly in retrospect, just said, "Well, you never come out of your bloody room now. You're either on your computer, watching movies, or have your head in a book. So what will be different?"
So Jonathan and his family move into the house in September 2004. They name the house Cartref, which is a Welsh word meaning home.
Once we had settled into the house, I actually quickly grew to like it. The internet quality there was awful, but I did end up making a friend there, a girl my age who also lived with her family locally. We are still friends to this day, actually, so it worked out all right.
But those first few weeks in their new home would only be a short period of peace for Jonathan's family, before things got somewhat strange.
I came home from school one day and my mother was sat in the kitchen. She was getting dinner ready for Dad and I. Back then it used to take me around an hour to get home from school. I went to Bilth Wells High School. It was around 20 miles away from the house. I used to get home around the same time as my dad each day, but my mother worked from home at the time, so she was almost always there.
Why do you remember this day in particular, John? What happened on that day to make it stand out in your mind?
So on a few occasions in the weeks we'd been living there, I'd started to hear sounds in the house. It was a really old house. I got that, but these sounds were different. I could specifically hear someone walking around. I could hear someone walking up and down the stairs. I know that people will say, "Well, it was obviously your mum and dad moving around." But I know it wasn't them. I know because I heard someone even when I was alone in the house. I could hear them on the stairs, walking. I could also hear them in the spare bedroom next to mine. It was always in those two places at the start. On that day when I got home from school, my mother was preparing dinner. She blurted out to me and asked if I had ever heard anyone in the house when there was no one else home.
So your mother had heard the movements too?
Yes, she had, and I told her that I had too. She was so relieved that I'd heard them. As she worked from home, she had been hearing the footsteps regularly when she was alone in the house. She asked if I thought she was stupid or crazy. I just said that if she was, then I was too.
So this was on a Tuesday, right? Tell us what happened later that week on the following Saturday.
I'd been alone most of the night as my mum and dad had gone out for a meal with friends. I'd closed myself in my room and was blasting music pretty loudly as I played video games. My parents got home around 11:30. My dad popped his head around my door and said that him and mum were going straight to bed, so asked if I could turn the music down. Their room was down the hall, with the bathroom in between their room and mine, so I didn't have to turn my music off completely, just lower it. Although I did turn it off on this occasion. After they had gone to bed, an hour or so passed, then my dad burst out of their room, shouting down the stairs angrily, "Who the hell is there?" My dad was a builder and a proper old-fashioned man's man. He was annoyed and stormed down the stairs, turning on all the lights. He was looking for someone who he could hear running down the stairs, he said. He asked if it was me, and I said I hadn't left my room all night. But there was no one there when my dad looked. He was convinced he could hear someone slowly stomping up the stairs, pausing, then running back down them quickly. He hunted high and low, expecting to find someone in the house. He even checked that all the doors and windows were locked to make sure no one had come in the house, then ran out again. But everything was securely locked up from the inside.
So your dad had heard the movements too. You all had, essentially.
Yeah, and no one had wanted to mention it to anyone else. We all felt so stupid, embarrassed to admit it. It made us feel like idiots, we all thought. Like we were paranoid or hearing things that weren't there. Dad never found the source of the noise that night. But a few weeks later, I came downstairs one morning and my mum was sat on the bottom step. She was upset and sobbing. When I asked her what was wrong, she said that someone had been slamming the kitchen cupboards behind her. She said, as she was stood slicing bread to make toast, the cupboards behind her opened and closed again with a loud slam, all in unison. She said it startled her so much that she immediately spun around and froze. She said she stood looking around the kitchen for a few moments, expecting something else to happen, or to see someone, but there was no one. And then as she went to slowly walk out of the kitchen, more cupboards behind her opened and closed with a loud slam once again. She ran out into the hallway. She said just stared into the kitchen for ages, waiting for something else to happen. She wondered if she was somehow mistaken. She was questioning herself, she said. After what seemed like an eternity, she turned around to walk down the hallway to come and get me and my dad. Then the bang of several kitchen cupboards rang out again. She said her legs went weak with fear, and she sat down on the stairs until I came down.
What did you do when you heard this from your mum?
Well, I went into the kitchen. I was shaking a bit, if I'm honest. I was expecting something to happen, but it didn't. The house was so quiet. This will sound really stupid now, but when I went back to my mum and helped her up, I had the strangest feeling come over me. I felt that someone was watching me from the top of the stairs. The feeling made me instantly anxious. I stared up the stairs into the dark hall, but there was no one there.
So John is starting to feel really creeped out now. As well as the footsteps on the stairs and in the spare bedroom, he's now feeling watched more and more while in the house.
The movements always seem to happen really late at night. I swear whatever caused them did it for maximum effect. But the watching, well, that happened at random times. I could be doing anything. Then all of a sudden I would feel eyes on me. I felt there was someone there, but I could never see anything or anyone. My dad also became really withdrawn too. I think he was frustrated that he couldn't explain what was happening. It was upsetting him, but he tried to hide his worry.
Then, one night, Jonathan is up late and really needs the toilet. He doesn't like being out of his room after midnight, but he can't hold it. So he heads into the bathroom, which is situated in the room next to his bedroom.
I went to the toilet, then turned off the light and headed down the hall back to my room. I could hear the footsteps on the stairs almost straight away. So I froze.
What did you do next, John?
I actually found the strength to confront it. It sounds stupid. I stood at the top of the stairs and shouted down, "Who are you? What the fuck do you want?"
And did that have any effect? Did it stop?
No, it was the biggest mistake. What happened was awful. I thought the footsteps would stop or just carry on regardless. But after I shouted down the stairs, there was this horrible noise, like an animal. Not a scream or a growl, but something in between. Guttural. I ran into my room so fast and dragged the cupboard in front of the door. Jamie, I can't tell you how scared I was. I was shaking. I'd never heard a sound as terrifying as that before. It was evil.
Do you think that an animal had potentially got into your house, maybe? Were there any signs left behind? Because, you know, animals might chew things, drag in dirt, leave a distinct smell, or defecate or urinate, for example.
No, I could see down the stairs and there was nothing there. There was nothing to indicate that anything had been there. No mess or clues. Nothing. And that noise was not an animal.
Then I have to ask, what do you think is making the noise?
I don't know, I really don't. But it was terrifying. The sound is really hard to explain. Alive, but not human or animal. I didn't sleep for a few nights after that, and my cupboard was a permanent fixture against my bedroom door.
The slow build-up of phenomena over the first few months in Jonathan's new home is both perplexing and shocking. It's easy to both dismiss and overly summarise by drawing an early conclusion, but I think it's worth taking stock. The psychological change in humans of any age or temperament, while under isolated circumstances, does regress a person's mental state to a more vulnerable position. Inherent fears and baseline thoughts are triggered by positions that are outside of our natural comfort zones. And even as an adult, there are still core fears and instilled negative cognitive bias. In fact, it's almost psychology 101 that by being put in a vulnerable situation will mean that the average human, be that man or woman, will amplify their awareness of senses. Sounds, vibrations, movements, even in the periphery, become tenfold. Now, I must be clear, I'm not dismissing any aspect of this story or series of events. I'm merely suggesting possible theoretical explanations that might feature within the possibilities of outcome. I emphasize the word might. Further thoughts of mine are of possible psychological explanations. Could this be down to good old-fashioned horror movie tropes, possibly? Stories and movie plots often have a deeper resonance, psychologically speaking, than we like to believe. Whilst most movies can be fantastic or far-fetched, we also, as a basic human characteristic, lend reality to what we have seen on the screen. When tropes are bedded into our psyche, they can be triggered months and even years after the fact, often with us relating current situations to what have been seen or experienced on the screen. Humans will look for patterns in things naturally. They experience familiarity, particularly to quell fear. This is common in us all. It's a core basic psychological reaction. And let's not forget that when this phenomenon starts, the house and environment is also very new and unfamiliar to the family, further allowing for fear-based cognition. Mass panic, or shared hysteria, is also not uncommon in these situations. Take the North Carolina mass panic of 2002, for example. 12 different girls all experienced seizures and other similar symptoms at a rural high school over a four-month period. The incidents all happened outside of class, with half having specifically occurred during the school lunch hour. Half of the affected girls were cheerleaders. Each of the girls had multiple tests and medical evaluations before they were each identified as having nothing wrong with them, other than, of course, a case of shared hysteria. Further incidents in recent history of similar events have happened in Portugal in 2006, Roanoke County, Virginia in 2007, New York in 2012, and Colombia in 2015, so they are not entirely uncommon. Food for thought also has to be given to sensory perception. In addition to the previously mentioned stresses on the accuracy of perceived incident, there is also a natural overestimation in senses in the average person. Sound direction and identification cannot always be relied upon, particularly if you don't have optimum hearing. But also visual accuracy in low light can also lead to mistaken observation. If you want to get super scientific and accurate, then know that the rainbow of radiation observable in the human eye is only around 0.0035% of the electromagnetic spectrum, a fantastically small fraction. And in addition to that, humans can only detect sound in the frequency range of, on average, 20 Hz to 20 kHz. These two factors might actually provide more insight into what we understand as supernatural phenomena to be within itself. It's often cited by paranormal researchers that children and pets, particularly cats and dogs, will often sense or bear witness to certain phenomena attributed to the supernatural. Well, cats, dogs, and even children under the age of 5 all have a much higher sensory awareness in the audio and visual ranges. So this may actually be an indicator towards identifying certain quote-unquote events and incidents. And finally, and this is very basic of me, but hear me out, if only to entertain Occam's razor. The house being discussed here is very rural. It's essentially a farmhouse. I'm sure I don't have to explain the likelihood of possibility of creatures, animals, and wildlife that could be lurking in the attic, behind walls, beneath floorboards, etc. Especially for a house that's over 100 years old, such is the case here. It's well worth considering, and probably advisable not to rule out completely. Anyway, let's get back into it. The family have been living in the house for a few months by now, and things are about to get a little weirder. There is no question that they are all perplexed and terrified in equal measure, but their sense of embarrassment over the whole affair keeps them from reaching out for help.
So, it was getting late one evening, and my father and I were the only ones in the house. My dad was in the kitchen, and I was laying on the sofa watching TV. We suddenly both became very aware of somebody walking around upstairs. The sound was coming from the spare bedroom. We both froze and stared at the ceiling. It was slowly walking. The steps went on for a few moments, then paused before a huge bang rang out. I think I left my body, I jumped so hard. Me and my father looked at each other. We were wearing the fright on our faces, but we both headed up the stairs.
Reluctantly, John and his dad head up to the spare bedroom. What did you both expect to find?
Well, given the volume of the bang that we heard, we expected to find a lot of damage, or a huge mess of some kind. The only things we kept in the spare bedroom were a wardrobe, a spare bed, a small bedside table, and some of my mother's art supplies. She liked to paint. As we headed up the stairs, my father flipped the light switch on, but the light didn't come on. Maybe the bulb had gone, I thought. But the light at the top of the stairs didn't come on either, or the light in the spare bedroom. We were both standing outside the spare bedroom, scared shitless. My dad leaned in to whisper to me. Wait here and I'll get the torch from the kitchen. The very second he said that, like the exact moment, all the lights came on at once. And now we knew what the loud noise in the spare bedroom was. Across the walls of the room, across the ceiling and over the window was paint. Tins and tins of red paint from my mother's supplies. There was so much of it oozing down the walls, although there was none on the carpet or bed. But on one of the walls, in the paint, there was what looked like long lines that had been dragged through the paint, kind of like long nails or big long claws. They were much bigger than a human hand in size, though. It was the weirdest thing I had ever seen.
And what happens next, John?
About a week later, my mother decided to leave. Officially, she moved to my grandmother's house to look after her, as she was old and unwell. But she never came back. She said it was to take care of Grandma, but I couldn't help but think the house was the biggest reason. I remember talking to my father and saying that maybe we should get someone in, like a priest or an expert on this kind of thing, but he wouldn't hear of it. He still wanted to play it down, to believe it was all harmless. The thought of people talking about us, laughing at us, or of us being in the press or anything like that. He hated the thought of it.
So, how long did everything go on for? How long were you in the house?
All the strange things that happened lasted for the entire time we lived there, off and on. Sometimes every few days, sometimes weeks would go by between instances. Me and my dad lived there for about 3 years before I left for university, though. While I was at uni, my father moved into a flat on his own in Shrewsbury. His plan was to do the house up and rent it out as a holiday home, but dad got ill and it never happened. Then my father passed away in 2010.
So what happened to the house then?
Well, it's still there, obviously. Me and my sister both own it together. We thought about selling it, but instead about 7 or 8 years ago, we did it up like my dad wanted. We now occasionally rent it out, although not full-time as we both have other careers.
I have to ask, has anyone who has stayed there reported anything to you? Anything out of the ordinary?
Well, yes, a few. Nothing crazy, but a few have asked about the footsteps and sounds in the house. And one or two have asked us if the place is haunted. We always laugh it off and say, possibly it's an old house, which I suppose is a bit naughty of us. One family just before the pandemic left a few days earlier than they had paid for. They said it was because they could hear voices in the house.
Wait, hold up. Voices? When you were living there, did you or your family ever hear voices? Or is that a new one on you?
Yes, I heard voices twice. The first time I heard a man talking in the spare bedroom when I was home on my own. I was too scared to go up and see who or what it was, and I couldn't make out what he was saying, but the voice was deep. It was husky, and definitely a man. The other time, and this was so dumb, it's embarrassing actually, I stood at the top of the stairs and thought that by repeatedly reading out loud a Bible blessing, that it would rid the house of anything bad there. Like I said, it's really embarrassing, like something from a bloody film. I read the verse from Samuel 7:29 to bless the house. I'm not religious at all, none of my family are. I had no idea what the hell I was doing. As I repeated the verse over and over, I swear I could hear whispering, a voice other than my own. Then before I stopped reading, and clear as day, like I can still hear it today, a deep, raspy voice came up the stairs and said, "Go away."
Oh my God, John, that's terrifying. Did it sound like anyone you know?
No, and that's just it. If I'm honest, it didn't sound like it even came from a human. It was weird and it's really hard to describe. I think the best way of putting it is that it sounded like someone who was doing an impression of a man. I've questioned myself so many times over the years if I actually heard it, but I'm certain I did.
Whenever I hear stories like this one, one of the first things I always ask myself, and the person sharing the story with me, is why, with everything that is going on, why did you stay in that house? How could you live with such phenomena and instances of pure terror? You would assume that any average person would be running down the street, screaming, and never set foot in the house again. I definitely think I would. But I'm always surprised that this is never the case. Sure, some people who report some events move on eventually, but it's rarely that simple or cinematic. I make reference again to the well-known case from 1977 in the United Kingdom, the case of the Enfield poltergeist. The events involved in the case lasted for over 2 years, with a specific poltergeist activity reported involving frequent incidents of objects being thrown, human levitation, spirit possession, and manipulation of the physical environment. The family remained in their home throughout, and for years after the events ceased. The truth is, the Hodgson family at the center of the case couldn't afford to up and move elsewhere. They didn't have any extended family or friends that they could rely on, stay with, or use for support. They couldn't sell the house, as it was owned by the local council authority, the same authority who were not able to move them to another location due to a shortage of residential premises at the time. Naysayers claim that the Enfield case was a hoax perpetrated by two teenage girls at the center of the poltergeist phenomenon, Margaret and her sister Janet. But even if that was the case, and the girls were master scam artists who managed to fool the police, neighbors, journalists, and scores of researchers who recorded and logged everything the girls did, then one thing that was clear was that their mother Peggy was not in on any scam. She was petrified, scared to her very soul, and she even sought medical support for her mental health during the ordeal. Do you not think if someone in her position could, then she would move the family to a safer location? And indeed she did try. She pleaded with the local housing authority to move the family. She begged neighbours for help and even reached out to her ex-husband, who had abandoned her and the children several years prior. She was a woman in sheer despair and desperation. So I asked Jonathan the same thing. Why did you stay? We didn't really, he said. I left for uni as soon as I could. I was a teenager. I had nowhere else to go, but I did spend a lot of time with friends and school holidays with my aunt and grandma. My mother, he said, did leave too, as soon as she got to her breaking point. She never set foot in that house again, Jonathan says. It was my dad who was the stubborn one. It was his dream house and a place he always wanted to live. Jonathan continues, he was also not the type of person who would accept an explanation for what was happening as being anything other than entirely basic and explainable, regardless of the times he was lost for words. He was old-fashioned, continued John. He wasn't religious, he wasn't superstitious, and he didn't suffer fools. But what about you, I asked John. What do you believe? What do you think was happening in that house?
I don't know. I really don't. I don't believe in ghosts or the supernatural or anything like that. It's all fairy tales in Hollywood. But with that said, what happened in that house, whatever it was very, very real.
Out of interest, when did you last visit the house?
I was there about 6 or 7 months ago to meet some contractors who were doing some work on the roof. Before that, it had been quite a few years since I went inside. I'm in no rush to go there, to be honest. My sister and I generally pay people to take care of the place, property agents. We are just the silent owners. The last time I spent time there, like actually lived there, was before I left for uni. And it was the worst experience of my life, so I'm happy to avoid it as much as possible.
Okay, so you know I'm going to ask you now. What happened then? What was the final straw for you in that house?
Okay. I'd been staying at my grandmother's house and helping my mum out for a few months prior to this, as I had left school in the June and uni didn't start until September, so I hadn't been in the house in a couple of months. But I needed to go back for a few days to pack up all my stuff ready for uni. I also needed to see my dad, who I hadn't spent any time with in ages. My dad was not in great shape when I saw him. He was so depressed and not like his old self. The house had made him really anxious and his nerves were gone. That house had totally worn him down. On my last night there, I was packing stuff up in my room, and I immediately returned to my old habit of locking myself firmly in, so I didn't have to see the stairs or the darkness of the hallway outside. And like clockwork, the footsteps started again. I was angry. I was so fed up of going through this, so I screamed out a pretty bad swear word. I shouted out, "Fuck you!" I think my anger surpassed the fear. The footsteps actually stopped. They stopped on the stairs. Then, and I don't know how to explain it, the footsteps ran up the stairs and turned down the hallway to my room. The steps were so heavy and sounded like more than just 2 feet. It was like a big, heavy animal running up the stairs and toward my room. It all happened so fast, I could barely react. As the thing ran down the hall, it crashed into my door, which caused a huge bang and shook the door. I could see the door shaking. Things fell off my shelves. Whatever the damn thing was, it was huge and it was pissed. I sprung back during all this until my back was against the opposite wall to the door, and I just froze in fear. I just stood there for what seemed like an eternity. It must have been around 20 or so minutes until I could compose myself. I didn't even stay the night after that. I grabbed my stuff and left soon after.
How many people have you shared your experience with over the years, John?
I've told my wife, and I think I spoke to my aunt about it, although it was my mother who originally told her. And now you. I think for many years I just wanted to forget it, but now I'm away from it, I want to know just what the hell it was.
The belief in ghosts dates back to the earliest days of oral tradition. From the first recorded moments of human history, there has been a long-standing desire to believe that those who are gone aren't really gone. It's almost as if the human brain is compelled, beyond rational understanding, to believe in they are there. To cope with their loss in many ways, it helps them to feel that the deceased are still alive. All this, of course, is if you believe that what went on in this house was a ghost or haunting in the first place. You may prefer to call it a poltergeist or a demon. Neither are unheard of or go unreported. Whilst not commonplace, sure, there are, and have consistently been throughout history, various credible accounts of such phenomena. A 2019 poll concluded that nearly half of Americans and British citizens believe that both ghosts and demons actually exist. This belief is despite the statistical evidence that belief in Orthodox religions is on the decline in both countries. And the reason I refer to religion here is that, well, that's where the notion of what a ghost actually is stems from. The Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. Indeed, ghostly phenomenon has historically been attributed to being the spirit of a deceased individual who has been left behind on Earth. Throw into the mix some 20th century folklore about the reason a ghost haunts a location is due to the spirit having quote-unquote unfinished business, and that's pretty much the standard and current definition or belief. It's congenital to the human condition and grief itself, more profoundly, to maintain that death is only a transition, not an end or finality. But this can only be complete crap, surely. Realistically, why would that even be a thing? Does organized Abrahamic religions not all agree that mankind is put on earth as a test of their suitability for entry into God's kingdom? If they fail to meet the requirements, they get sent to hell. So where does a spirit hanging around a house in mid-Wales for years on end feature into that scenario? And what about the spirits that are hundreds of years old? Why don't spirits from periods of history prior to the Middle Ages ever get reported? Have you ever heard of a Neanderthal ghost? What about the spirits of animals? Rarely do people claim to be haunted by a dog or a cat. But on the rare occasion that they do, what could the unfinished business of a ghost cat possibly be? Breaking down the folklore opens up a quagmire of the absurd and only contributes to the discussion around religion itself. But I'm not here for a discussion on scriptures or to insult anyone who finds truth or solace in any religion. More so, a realistic explanation of what we today accept as a quote-unquote ghost or apparition. Does a ghost remain the same age and have the same appearance that they did at the time of death? How does that work if they were beheaded or died in an explosion, for example? What about dead children? Unable to look after themselves in life, how would they manage alone in death? The more you break the concept of a ghost or haunting down, the more you come to realize that ghosts are for the living, not the dead. Those left behind, stranded in life, who don't want to let go of their loved one, so want to believe that they are still present, still the version of them that they loved, and are desperately trying to contact their still living loved ones to tell them that they love them. Of course, that's not to say that the phenomena does not exist, far from it. Though the underlying phenomenon is likely far more scientific in explanation, of course. Is there a possibility of this phenomena having a consciousness or awareness whilst also existing in the audible and visual spectrum outside the human range? Maybe some individuals experience this phenomenon because they are more sensitive to a greater spectrum range. We know, after all, that scientifically, those individuals do exist. Children under 5 is a core example. What if the phenomena doesn't entirely reside solely, or in part, in our reality? Again, we know from proven theory that other dimensions are not a thing of movies or literature, but a genuine reality. What if planes of reality intersect on occasion, or if specific intelligences or phenomena have the ability to transfer between them, naturally or through intelligent manipulation? I personally don't believe that this is that difficult to accept, especially given what physics has proven with theoretical equation over the last 130 years. Finally, and this is an area of particular interest to me, it is not far of a stretch to believe, or at least pose the possibility, that ghosts, apparitions, demons, poltergeists, whatever terminology you choose to use for those similar phenomena, are indeed elements of a psychological nature. Now, I'm not suggesting that they are figments of imagination. I'm suggesting that what if human psychology could affect the physical environment? Our previous episode regarding precognition touched on this slightly, but extrasensory perception, whilst not scientifically proven without a doubt, has also not been disproven, and the human brain certainly is a wonder. Of course, the saddest part of this entire story is the breakdown and dissolution of a family. Whilst none of those involved would attribute the phenomena as being the causing factor of their split, there is also no denial, particularly from Jonathan, that it likely was a contributing factor to their breakup as a family in some way, shape or form. But what advice can we give him? What information can we share that might give him some answers? Well, without actually experiencing that house and collating a massive data, it's hard to give any real help or suggestion. So I guess that leaves me with one final question for you tonight, Jonathan. Would you allow me and my team to spend some time in the house and collate some data?
Most definitely. I just hope that you don't find nothing.
And John, would you come with us?
Thank you for taking the time to listen to our show tonight. Be sure to leave us a 5-star review on your chosen podcast platform and subscribe to our show so that you never miss an episode. Our shows aren't sponsored by any company or corporation, so any support you can give us goes a long way in supporting the work that we do. From all of us here at Dead Souls, sleep tight.